You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, March 22nd, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Senate confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson continue. The words CRT come up, surprisingly. Russia continues to shell and bomb Ukraine cities. Meanwhile, Ukraine claims Russian tank manufacturers have had to shut down for lack of supplies. U.S. national security ghouls now trying to tee up the use of mini nukes. What could possibly go wrong?
Smart nukes.
It's the Uber of nukes.
It's the Happy Meal of nukes. They're cute.
Biden to Europe as he warns U.S. businesses, beware of coming cyber attacks. Meanwhile, the Fed signals another rate hike. SEC close to enacting a climate disclosure rule, which is more important than you think. Connor Lamb, running in the primary for Pennsylvania's Senate, may sink the Democrats' pickup chance there. Meanwhile, Eric Greitens may show the Dems Missouri's Senate seat. Show the Dems from Missouri, the show me state.
Yep.
All right.
Yikes. That's still current.
Yeah, exactly. Lake Powell's massive reservoir for the Colorado River is at its lowest levels since its creation in the early 60s. Meanwhile, new report, 13,000 Afghan newborns have died in Afghanistan since the beginning of the year from hunger. Finally, the Indiana governor vetoes its legislature's anti-trans sports bill. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's Tuesday. Joining me, as always, Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma.
Tuesday Newsday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well done.
Because we're just doing news. We don't have a guest in the first hour.
Yeah, no, I got it immediately.
Get it? Yep. It's for the audience.
I just want to touch on this. It's a horrible,
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find this here in my stack. Bear with me, folks. The Human Rights Watch, I can't find the piece, but I remember it pretty well here. Human Rights Watch reports that 13,000 Afghan newborns have died as a function of malnutrition. There are millions who are also in danger of starvation. And the biggest problem is that there is the banking system is still more or less completely shut down, more or less, because of our continuing sanctions against the Taliban. And, yes, this is, you don't want to fund the Taliban. They're horrible. But you have a choice. I mean, presumably they're horrible because of what they're doing to their people. And that's true. There's no doubt. But if people are dying, that seems to me, to be the first order of business. This is according to HRW.org. Since January 2022, Roughly 13,000 newborns have died from malnutrition and hunger-related diseases. 95% of the population does not have enough to eat. 3.5 million children need nutritional support. A doctor from Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, half of those we admit are critical care are also malnourished. Almost 800 children in one hospital in Helmand province are there because of acute malnutrition. The problem is they don't have a functioning banking system at this point. Billions of dollars in assistance have been unlocked by the World Bank in the United States after we absconded with $7 billion of Afghan money. We kicked $3.5 back. But restrictions on Afghanistan's central bank are still making large transactions or withdrawals impossible. Aid groups delivering humanitarian assistance say they're unable to move funds into Afghanistan because international banks remain wary of pre-existing sanctions on the Taliban, and Afghan banks limit cash withdrawals due to currency shortages.
Yes, there's like no money, which is part of why these sanctions are so
devastating. Aid groups say the payments to Afghanistan are routinely blocked by banks wary of running afoul of sanctions. And so there's no way to get resources to Afghanistan unless presumably, you know, some of these aid organizations are going to travel with a suitcase full of money. And meanwhile, you've got thousands of people, babies, dying.
But I'm glad the United States can feel morally righteous in not giving money to the Taliban.
Well, it's pretty, yeah. I mean, it's
a continuation of war.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, I mean, this is, in many ways, I mean, more effective.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. There's no one that I have ever heard in any quarter who has articulated some type of scenario where the Taliban falls. This is not a situation where we're going to punish the Afghan people so much so that they're going to rise up against the Taliban. That's not happening. I'm not suggesting those scenarios are any more moral, but just from even a practical level, the Afghan people are not going to rise up against the Taliban at this point. The reason why the Taliban were able to move in so quickly after the U.S. just announced that they were leaving was because the Afghan people are just tired of war being waged in their country.
But maybe if we starve them a little bit more, then they'll get so desperate that they'll flip on the Taliban. Like, maybe that is really what is underlying this. And that is quite evil.
Well, I mean, but my point is like, it's also completely deluded.
And it's delusional.
Show me a single foreign policy expert, anyone who studies Afghanistan. I mean, anybody who is making the claim that this is going to bring about a change in the Afghan government. I mean, it is just sheer vindictiveness. It is sheer domestic politics in this country, so that Biden doesn't get accused of being soft on the Taliban. And meanwhile, presumably the reason why you would be hard on the Taliban is because of what they're doing to the Afghan people. But we are, by making it impossible for Afghanistan to function, we are doing far worse.
Right. But what they would say is, well, if you give the money to the Taliban, which is now the government of Afghanistan ruling there, well, we don't know what they would do with it. They might take it for themselves. But again, what is the other alternative? What is the option?
And this is also, let's be clear, This is
the reality that we're dealing with. Well, you can live in a fantasy land and pretend like Taliban isn't controlling Afghanistan. But if you want to actually, I don't know, give at least not be punitive,
provide reparations at the, I mean, that's what needs to be done for the Afghan people, then you've got to deal with the facts on the ground. And it's not like the United States is above dealing with reprehensible people leading governments. We do it on a daily basis. This is just punitive. And like, as you say, it's this like mythical constituency that's going to make a determination on Biden based on sanctions that are in Afghanistan. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to make a judgment on his presidency based on that. So then it's just cruelty.
And it's really just about allowing at least the banking system at least to just operate. But that's where we're at.
I think like it also influences how I feel about like the support of sanctions on Russia, for instance. Like, I feel like we're going to be in a similar situation here, and not to like say like there's not good reason for it and Putin's horrible, but like the effects on regular people, I'm concerned about it. And that's why I really like have a hard time saying I support this sort of stuff, because we're seeing it playing out right in front of us.
I'm not justifying it, but I do think that they're different situations. I don't know that it's really any more moral, frankly, in the context of Russia. But just sheerly on a practical level, there is at least an argument that sanctions on Russians will be like, wait, what? Why are we doing this invasion in Ukraine? Like, it may raise that. It may create some domestic pressure.
And we also didn't occupy.
It could do the opposite as well. And I'm not endorsing this argument.
Right.
I'm just saying that you hear people articulate it, and it's not a holy, although I don't know that if we've ever really seen any example of this working. Like, you know, we've had sanctions on Iran. I haven't seen it work.
And on Cuba.
We've had sanctions on Cuba. And really what it does is it ends up hardening nationalistic sentiment, because there's an outside enemy. But there's at least a pretense, right, when you make that argument. There's no one even making that argument with Afghanistan. There's no one even making that argument. And you know, in the context of Russia, again, I just want to be clear. You would be causing deprivation, perhaps some death, I don't know. But we're talking about almost 5,000 newborn babies a month in this year alone who have died. As far as I can tell, far greater of children who have died in Ukraine. This is not a, you know, this is not a competition, but it is, it really is amazing.
And at least Russia's economy has the ability to, it's larger. It's not completely, you know, weakened after a 20-year occupation the way that Afghanistan is. And what bothers me too about this is that there's this notion like, it reminds me a bit of Biden saying, oh, we'll donate this number of millions of vaccine doses to the rest of the world, as opposed to releasing the intellectual property and the patents and waiving them. It's the same thing with humanitarian assistance versus lifting the sanctions. The United States still wants to have some sort of control over the situation, and they actually don't want things to change in any meaningful way. They want to be the kingmakers. And that's the arrogance of a bloated
empire. I don't even think it's that. I think it's honestly just the administration is just afraid of the 2 weeks news cycle that would be associated with it, because nothing else.
Well, then they have baby's blood on their hands
without doubt.
Based on like a completely non-existent constituency that they're trying to appeal to. I just like want to be that is a delusional view if that's fully the case.
Let's move into the hearings that are going on in Washington now. Ketanji Brown Jackson, she is getting the first full day of actual like sort of back and forth questions, and Marsha Blackburn really is having quite a time. But first, let's hear. Let's just hear Dick Durbin and Ketanji Brown Jackson, where Ketanji Brown Jackson is talking about Josh Hawley's opening remarks and his Twitter thread where he is claiming that Jackson was soft on crime when it came to sentencing child pornographers.
There are troubling patterns.
Yes, troubling patterns he's noticed. I bet.
I thought about his charges as I watched you and your family listening carefully yesterday and what impact it might have had on you personally to know that your daughters, husband, parents, family, and friends were hearing the charges that your implementation of this law, sentencing, endangered children. Could you tell us what was going through your mind at that point?
Thank you, Senator. As a mother and a judge who has had to deal with these cases, I was thinking that nothing could be further from the truth. These are some of the most difficult cases that a judge has to deal with because we're talking about pictures of sex abuse of children. We're talking about graphic descriptions that judges have to read and consider when they decide how to sentence in these cases. And there's a statute that tells judges what they're supposed to do. Congress has decided what it is that a judge has to do in this and any other case when they sentence. And that statute doesn't say, look only at the guidelines and stop. The statute doesn't say impose the highest possible penalty for this sickening and egregious crime. The statute says calculate the guidelines, but also look at various aspects of this offense and impose a sentence that is, quote, sufficient but not greater than necessary to promote the purposes of punishment. And in every case, when I am dealing with something like this, it is important to me to make sure that the children's perspective, the children's voices are represented in my sentencings.
I think she could also have just, like, you know, pulled the sort of like classic trope of, you know, this is, it is up to you, Senator, to change the laws. It's my job to follow them. I do not believe in a judge making up the law as she goes along. And the statute does require me. I mean, if she really wanted to go hard at Holly.
She was hinting at that, but she can't. She doesn't have the luxury of being a black woman in front of.
She should
go
Kavanaugh and just start screaming like an angry badger.
Ask the moms.
Yeah.
Ask the moms. Can you imagine? Can you just even imagine if she was just like, well, I like beer.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine?
Have you ever heard of boofing? Because it's fun.
Yeah. Oh, my God. There's so many sort of hits from that.
It really is stunning when you look back on, like, how the hell is that guy on the Supreme Court? And they have the audacity to say, I mean, look, I would like a Supreme Court justice to the left of KBJ. But relative to Breyer, it's an upgrade. And there's also no doubt from the perspective of those who, you know, are talking about like the quality of jurist, like she's just so far heads and tails above the intellect of a guy like Kavanaugh. It is stunning.
Yeah, and less gambling debts.
Well, yes, among all the other things.
Ask the moms.
I mean, like, she could not just contemplate for a moment. If you are one of those people, I would certainly hope that you would not be listening to this program if you were, frankly. But if you're one of those people who are convinced that Kavanaugh was railroaded, if you're one of those people who are convinced that Kavanaugh was railroaded, just contemplate the chance that Ketanji Brown Jackson would have if even anything remotely close to those accusations, if there was an individual, never mind what the accusation was, there was an individual who's willing to testify on any accusation which required her to say the words, "I like beer," if she would be on the Supreme Court. I mean, honestly, like,
you think I'm soft on child molesters? Look at my calendar. I wrote, yeah, calendar. I hate child porn every day, yeah, in high school. That's every day.
I mean, it's just impossible to conceive
it's
of.
Just unreal.
Or even just her, yeah, doing his energy for even a, like, a brief moment. It would be a giant, like,
5 seconds of her having anything remotely close to his disposition there, and everything would be, she'd, you'd have Tucker Carlson saying she's an affirmative action pick, she's not worthy of being there, and then everybody else would be saying, like, I just wonder if she has the judicial temperament.
Yeah. It's a long way of saying that there's a lot of double standards for white men,
yes,
versus black women and black people in general.
Yes. Yes, a very long-winded way of saying that, but that's my trademark.
Hmm.
Here is...
Do we have to go to break?
Do we have to go to break?
Oh, no.
Well, actually, we should read this ad. Thank you for reminding me. We come back, we'll talk about Marsha Blackburn. So this is a weird story in terms of this advertiser. Years ago, we got... We were asked if we wanted to advertise for Nutrafol, which is a basically a supplement that you take for hair growth.
Yeah.
And at the time I was like, I can't remember because we got a shipment of it and we've had it in the office. And at the time it was like, I was going to try and get Michael to take it to see if, but Michael was a little sensitive about that.
Aww.
And I don't know what happened. Like, I don't know if we didn't hear from them again or whatnot, or Michael refused, or Michael didn't.
I think he probably refused.
And so, we're in the office and I'm trying to like get things cleaned up. I'm like, oh, we still have this Nutrafol. And we had never heard from them for advertising. And as soon as I said that, Emma was like, Emma said she had a friend who was ill, had lost her hair, and took Nutrafol, and
it was like a miracle worker for her. And, you know, I should also say, like, my sister didn't have hair loss, but just took it to thicken her hair, and she said that it, like, was amazing.
So
I have two personal experiences.
Well,
with it. Yeah,
like,
her friends who had,
and then like literally a week or two later. I mean, this is like, we've had those things in the office for like 2 or 3 years, which also suggests that maybe I should be cleaning things up a little bit. And then like a week or two later, I got, an email saying, are you willing to, advertise Nutrafol? And after Emma had said that, I was like, well, yeah. And it's also, apparently like one of the, sort of few non like chemically, well, I mean, I guess these are they all chemicals? They're just not artificial. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement. And apparently is clinically shown to improve your hair growth, thickness, and visible scalp coverage. Nutrafol's hair growth nutricicles, I don't know what those are called. They go beyond genetics to multi-target the root causes of thinning, including stress, hormones, nutrition, metabolism, aging, and lifestyle through whole body health. Each formula is physician formulated using natural patented technology, and it provides consistent, reliable results without compromising your sexual health. In clinical study, men showed progressive improvement in hair growth and thickness after 3 to 6 months, and apparently works for women as well. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com and entering the promo code MAJORITY. You save $15 off your first month subscription. This is their best offer anywhere. It's only available to the U.S. for customers for a limited time. It is Nutrafol, Nutrafol.com, promo code MAJORITY. Plus, you get free shipping on every order. You can get $15 off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol, Mediaconsult.com, promo code majority. I might start taking that.
I mean, again, I don't know any men who are taking it, but my sister would just want her hair to get thicker. And
I feel like my baldness is impending. Like
I think it would happen by now.
Hair. I have a receding hairline.
You're in your 50s. I think you're good.
It is true. I am in my 50s.
I will say, like, that's you're lucky. A lot of men don't have hair. I know it.
I've been expecting mine to go, and it's kind of hung around. And honestly, if it goes,
you're a pro at going because it's lower maintenance, right? You've said that before.
Exactly. Yeah. If I didn't want it to happen in my 20s, but now I'm through my 20s, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'm just not confident in the shape of my skull. I am not. I have a feeling it would be a problem.
Did you ever have short hair?
Did I ever have short hair?
Yeah, did you ever like do buzz cuts and stuff like that?
I had not a buzz cut, but pretty close actually, like 10 years ago. And I was shocked. Like I went in and I said to the guy, like, you know, I used to get like the razor cut. And I said, like, I said 5, you know, which is, you know, not that
long. Is 5 the shortest? It goes...
It's the longest one. Oh. But the dude did like 2. And I was like, well, what are you doing? Like, once he takes one swipe, it's over.
Yeah.
You can't really do anything. All right. Well, let's get back into this. Over the past 2 weeks, we've been talking about these laws that are being passed. Texas, Tennessee, Idaho, and maybe other places at this point, where they're empowering vigilantes, essentially, through the civil courts to sue people who get abortions and people who aid in that abortion. This is all going to withstand Supreme Court scrutiny, and it more or less has in the context of Texas. And then the question is, what are they going to come for next? They may or may not fully repeal Roe v. Wade. They are going to effectively make it impossible to get an abortion in anywhere from 10 to 20, maybe 20, 22 states in this country. They are going to maybe successfully make it practically impossible for most women to get an abortion if you are a citizen of that state or a resident of that state. You can be sued. You cannot leave the state to go get an abortion. What are they going to come for next? If you think this is about abortion as opposed to controlling women's sexuality, I don't know how else
And freedom and self-determination.
And freedom and self-determination.
Life
and everything
outside
that's
of
up
the
that.
Home that's not at the behest of a man.
And if this is not ultimately about just maintaining the patriarchy and the essentially the Christian fundamentalist vision of what a family and a home should be, you are greatly mistaken. And here is Marsha Blackburn. And we said this the other day.
Yeah, this has been what you said. I mean, they're going to come for birth control next. And here she is talking about Griswold v. Connecticut, which was a Supreme Court decision that basically allowed, was it married couples to get contraceptives at that time, but then it was expanded.
Yep.
So wide acceptance of contraceptives.
Here is Marsha Blackburn. This is where it starts. She's not some, you know, backbencher in a state legislature in Idaho.
She's a senator.
Judge who can't say how or if she will apply the Constitution in her rulings is up for a seat on the Supreme Court. Over the past few weeks, I've heard a lot of liberal activists argue that this shouldn't matter. When they look at the Supreme Court, all they see is a rubber stamp for their cultural agenda. The idea a biased policymaker justice appeals to them because they prioritize results over reasoning. After all, choosing heroes and villains is much easier when all you care about is getting the result you want. The chaos that ensues when the court abandons the Constitution and kicks at moving goalposts doesn't really matter to them, but it should. constitutionally unsound rulings like Griswold versus Connecticut, Kelo versus City of New London, and NFIB versus Sebelius confuse Tennesseans and left Congress wondering who gave the court permission to bypass our system of checks and balances. It is the 11th hour, and where Judge Jackson stands on the Constitution remains a secret. Will she apply its principles as written, or does she wrongly believe that the Constitution is a so-called living document?
Okay, let's. We don't need to hear any more from here, but this is it's just fascinating that she's bringing up Griswold. The other two that she brought up, NFIB versus Sebelius, was essentially the Obamacare case.
Yeah, what was the middle one that she said?
The second one she said was Kelo versus New London. And this was a case where there was the city of New London was involved in a taking of property for Pfizer. To build some type of like a factory or something there with the idea that they would be getting tax revenue from Pfizer. And so this was a legitimate taking. I happen to agree that that case, I don't feel comfortable so much with that case. I don't know that tax revenue in that instance, it justifies the taking of property because it's inevitably right. going to be also, poor people's property. I knew the lawyer. I went to college with, I think, one of the lawyers involved in that case. Hmm. But the bottom line is, and then of course, Griswold, when was the last time you heard anybody talk about Griswold? And we should say she mentioned two cases that took place in the last 20 years. And then one that isn't, that is
65.
Yeah. I think Griswold was even before then.
Yeah, no, 65? 65, yeah.
Okay, so 60
it was
years.
It was like the last time I really heard about Griswold in any way is it's like that's the precursor to Roe because Roe comes 2 years later and then the court was just taking on some of these cases and ruling in the right way. But
The fact that she's going after Griswold, not Roe v. Wade, because she's already got that in her back pocket.
Oh yeah.
Now we're going for the next. There it is.
I mean it's a frightening little section of a speech because that's clearly thought of with her like legal team and stuff like that, like we're gonna mention this specific stuff.
Oh yeah, and it's not her legal team, right? It's the Heritage Foundation, right, it's the Federalist Society. I mean, this is the blueprint of where they're going. You begin to introduce it into the lexicon, you begin to actually just sort of like mainstream the idea that standard conservative thought is that Griswold was judicial activism. The idea that you could have birth control.
Oh, they're coming for the morning after pill. That's like 2 years. I mean, like that, we're a few months away, a year away, 2 years away. And like, what's crazy too is I feel like there's been very little reckoning with the fact that we're at the crest of this. Like this started with Hobby Lobby and all that stuff when they were targeting, I mean, abortion is a separate thing, but this is a part of it as well. Like the right for a private entity to say that our sincerely held religious beliefs as a corporation does not allow us to provide birth control in our health coverage for our employees. Like these are all branches from the same tree, and they are taking a multi-pronged approach to controlling women. And so, you know, this kind of stuff terrifies me. I mean, birth control is such an important way for women to maintain their independence and their, I mean, not even self-determination, but just their ability to exist in society in it's somewhat of an equal manner. And that going after that, it's scary. It's really scary.
That's it. I mean, there's the agenda. I mean, that's and you're going to really see it. You're going to really see it as it comes. And, you know, it is essentially open field. It's open running now. They just see the end zone. They've got six members of that court. They don't need all six.
Let's hope
John Roberts is going to be the one who provides like the fourth vote on a bunch of these so that he can, so that Really?
See, is yeah, there's a bipartisan people on the minority too.
The idea is that Roberts knows, and you could say, you could look at it right now in terms of like, you know, who was on the Warren court? I don't know, but I know who the Chief Justice was. Name for me who was on the Rehnquist court. That was only 10 years ago. I can name some actually, but for the man, but the point stands, the Burger court, these eras are defined in terms of history by the Supreme, by the Chief Justice. And so if you have a bunch of rulings that are 6-3, it's going to look worse than if you have 5-4, it looks at least like this has been really contemplated and it moved. It puts the veneer of more thought and debate moving forward.
Of judiciousness,
exactly.
If you will.
But this is where it's going.
How judicious the stacked deck is.
Here is, and then the other aspect of this you have to keep in mind is obviously there's a certain amount of, there's a certain amount of politics that are associated with this, all of this. And one way you keep the Republicans from going too far in the attack, and Mitch McConnell does not really want to have a huge fight here. They don't care about this third justice. It is not it doesn't matter who you put on the court right now. It's not going to have implications as far as they're concerned, unless, you know, knock on wood, one of the conservative justices or two of them
retire
in a, you know, like a bus helps them retire or something like that.
We just want Clarence Thomas to have a beach home. That's not all just... we want. Or another
well,
beach home.
Yes, I would like Clarence Thomas to have a beach home and there to be big waves and him to invite a couple of his former colleagues. And
right. I mean, I'm trying to help you get around what you're trying to say.
I'm not trying to get around it.
I get it. All right. Okay.
I'm not trying to get around it. When
you want them to go surfing.
When they were asking me about Peacock, the former head of MSNBC was like, is there anything that, you know, he's like, you know, just, you know, don't be you're not too bombastic of a guy, are you? I mean, they had not watched anything. I said, well, you mean like, he gave me an example of, this is what it was. He gave me an example of like Ed Schultz maybe having said something to the effect of like wanting Scalia to die. And I said, oh,
based Schultz.
Yeah, no, I did that. I didn't pick him out to wanting to die. It just didn't occur to me. But when he died, I said it was a great day for the country.
Danced.
And he's like, you did what? And I said, I mean, I think it's pretty inarguable if you have our politics. And I just pretended like I thought he had my politics. it's pretty inarguable that. I mean, I'm sure he was a nice guy and a good father. And
good friends with Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, yeah. But people die all the time. And it doesn't even occur to any of us to say anything. But really the important thing from a news perspective is not how's it going to impact his family, because nobody ever cares about that when anybody dies. The news story here is what's it going to do for the lives of millions of people. What's it going to do for the existence of unions? And at that point, this was before Janus, and this was before the Republicans got the Supreme Court back. It was really positive. And I said that. And I said, you know, I'm happy to defend it on that way. And he just sort of like, well, okay, well, yeah, but in general.
My brain rejects that. Right?
In general, I was like, I certainly am not afraid to defend anything I've ever said. But okay.
All right. Anyway.
Anyways, the point is, this is a political process. The Republicans do not want to engage in a serious, protracted fight over this nomination because A, they have already confirmed her to a lifetime position on the federal court. She has been a federal judge for two years now. And B, they also, you know, this is a historic confirmation insofar as we have denied Black women an opportunity to be on this court for our entire existence as a nation. And it's absurd. And so I think the Democrats are feeling fairly confident that she's going to pass, and they want to make sure that the Republicans understand that if they they F around with this, they're going to pay a price. This is a very touching moment where they attempted to humanize.
I cried a little bit. I got to be real. I mean, I try. Sometimes I'm super cynical, but sometimes I'm a huge softie. And like I mean, this is remarkable that her parents are alive to see her get nominated to the Supreme Court. It's unbelievable. And they lived, you know, she'll talk about it.
And moved to Washington, D.C. to experience new freedom. When I was born here in Washington, my parents were public school teachers. And to express both pride in their heritage and hope for the future, they gave me an African name, Ketanji Onyeka, which they were told means lovely one. My parents taught me that unlike the many barriers that they had to face growing up, my path was clearer, so that if I worked hard and I believed in myself in America, I could do anything or be anything I wanted to be. Like so many families in this country, they worked long hours and sacrificed to provide their children every opportunity to reach their God-given potential. My parents have been married for almost 54 years, and they're here with me today. I cannot possibly thank them enough for everything they've done for me. I love you, Mom and Dad. My father, in particular, bears responsibility for my interest in the law. When I was 4, we moved back to Miami so that he could be a full-time law student, and we lived on the campus of the University of Miami Law School. During those years, my mother pulled double duty, working as the sole breadwinner of our family while also guiding and inspiring 4-year-old me. My very earliest memories are of watching my father study. He had his stack of law books on the kitchen table while I sat across from him with my stack of coloring books. My parents also instilled in me and my younger brother, Ketaj, the importance of public service.
Yeah, that's a pretty impressive story. I don't wonder how many of, we know the last couple of Supreme Court justices that we've seen rise to the bench. Gorsuch and Kavanaugh went to the same private school.
Yeah, right. And it's just like... The fact that, you know, I don't know how old her parents are, but they're up there in age, and like to be able to see this historic moment for their daughter to be potentially, likely, hopefully, the first Black woman on the Supreme Court. I mean, that's, I know America is not this, but that's what America says it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Judge Kavanaugh's like, just remembering all the guys I boofed with. See you out there. Thanks.
Squiggle.
For the Squee, yeah.
Donnie, my man.
The Renata Lumnius.
It really does have, yeah, it has the same. It was really like if you compare that to that moment where like they're just, you know, cutting to Kavanaugh's family as he's just lying through his teeth.
Spitting and that hissing and screaming.
That meant we were friends with them, and why you would even suggest anything otherwise
right.
Is really like, okay, bro.
Honestly. Imagine that was just like, I just wonder that moment still, I know I've talked about it way too much, but I just wonder like when Kavanaugh goes home, he and his wife go home and she goes, I was so proud of you today when you pretended that that thing in the yearbook was not what every single other person in the room knew what it was.
And you just, act like you were standing up for her.
I mean, honestly, like it, if I saw my husband, wife lie with such fervor and ease in that moment on something like, you know, I would be a little bit concerned about like, you know.
That's
like,
why you're not married to Brett Kavanaugh.
You're going out to get cigarettes? Really? Why did it take you 4 hours?
I mean, she probably loves that. She probably loves like, yeah, you're. These like liberals, this is a witch hunt, and you fight back.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And you know, right. It was funny what you did to that hussy, anyway. back in the day.
Right, right.
She probably supports that.
She deserved it.
I wonder if she doesn't, like, if when the word alumnus comes up, if there's a little frosty atmosphere, like, ooh.
Wait. All right, one more clip on this. This is on Fox, so I don't really expect much. It would have been nice to see people push back on Bill Barr as he goes around with his tour to sell his stupid book. But here is a former attorney general, Bill Barr.
Oh, God, did you know that his book was like number one the other day, the other week?
Jesus, that doesn't surprise
me. It's like the John Bolton book tour, just vile.
He's on Fox News. See if you can spot the laugh line.
I believe that she is generally well qualified. The knocks on her is that maybe she's soft on crime. Also, she was a public defender. She defended some Guantanamo Bay detainees. Other than that, people like Jonathan Turley say she appears to be well qualified. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Turley. She is well qualified.
Pause it for 1 second. Other than the fact that she defended Guantanamo Bay detainees, like, it's not like we hadn't tortured them and stripped them of every possible right. It is sort of gross that we also provided them lawyers. But go ahead.
She is well qualified. She's been a district court judge and a court of appeals judge. She's practiced law as a defender in the criminal justice process. So I think she, you know, has the right background for the Supreme Court. And the position she's taken and the people she's represented don't seem disqualifying to me. So I would expect her to get all the Democratic votes, barring some, you know,
Republican.
She may get some Republican. That's really what's at question, you know, up for grabs here. How she performs will affect how many Republicans she gets. I assume she will get some Republicans. The Republicans generally view Supreme Court justices and appointees as the president should be able to get their choice, barring some, you know, serious disqualification.
And it's such a great point, Bill. And by the way, welcome.
Such a great point, Bill. Bill Barr, Attorney General, Attorney General, Attorney General. Why does that stick in my head? Who's the Attorney General now? Merrick Garland. Wait, did you just say that Republicans generally give the president their pick?
Generally.
You know, barring some extraordinary thing like, because Merrick Garland was such a radical pick. This guy was out there. It is amazing that they can, like, just have.
Or, like, compartmentalize, right? Now,
your pick to make.
Right. Well, I mean, like, McConnell and Co., they see this as you say, like, not something they want to fight. It's going to be the third vote. It's not a huge deal for them. So because of the stakes have changed for the Republicans, so do the standards.
Right. Exactly. But it's just so. And it's just so. It's just so impressive that they can all just either forget. I mean, you'd think he'd be a little bit sensitive to it because he realized, like, who was my successor in the Attorney General office? Oh, it was that guy who was denied even a hearing to be Supreme Court Justice. This is like, I mean, if Barack Obama is not responsible for the lunacy on Fox News, and I cannot assure you of this, but the ability of Bill Barr to go on and say that on Fox News was in no way encumbered by the politicking of the Obama administration. In other words, if they were participating and engaging in politics, the ability of Bill Barr to say that, where nobody even then there, like, even stuttered or hesitated for a moment, is a function of the Obama administration just sitting back and going, like, hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They acted as if, like, they're right. In the grand scheme of things, that's what, like, no one's going to remember Merrick Garland.
They acted as if, like the Republicans, I mean, like the Democrats always do, which is, like, I think history is going to judge that we were on the right side of this. And, like, as if, like, that's, A, probably not even the case.
It's also not useful.
Well, and it's,
like, history? Great. Yeah. That's great for you in the present or, like, near future? Not really.
But think about the history that will judge the Republicans in that. I mean, think about the layers of history you need to go through. Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump were able to get 250 federal judges on the bench, three Supreme Court justices under one term. Like, I don't even know if that's happened, when the last time that happened. You will have to dig so deep in that history. Like, it would have to be some podcast in the future that Saul is doing or Mile is doing on this show when they're talking to some historian who specifically talks about the Supreme Court. Like, history ain't going to absolve them on this. No. No. There's going to be, hopefully, there'll be half a dozen other historians who go like, yeah, Obama really screwed this up. Folks, it's time for us to go to the fun half.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
So a little behind the scenes action.
So disciplined.
Sam said we might do a little bit of a shorter first hour, yep. And I didn't believe him because usually it never happens.
The show was supposed to be 45 minutes, the first half.
But now it's actually happening.
Conceived. And so now I'm talking just every day, but somehow we always go in an hour. Yesterday we did like an hour and a half. So I was just enjoying talking to you. Full 3 hours yesterday. Yeah. Folks, you can support us in this endeavor by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. It is your support that makes this show possible. When you become a member, you get the free show, free of commercials. You get the fun half. And more importantly, you allow this show to survive and thrive day in, day out. Please, if you have the means, jointhemajorityreport.com is where you sign up. If you don't and you want access to the fun half, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Say right in the subject line, fun half. And then, you know, give us some time and we will get there. Reminder, you can buy a ticket to the live stream of the Brooklyn show this weekend. It is going to be jam-packed. It's going to be like one of those. This one, Boston's going to have a different feel. But this one is going to feel like nobody's going to know this reference. In fact, like 80% of the audience is too young to understand this reference. But there used to be like these, like almost like these telethons where you just have like cavalcade of
I understand that reference.
And star over and over again. I mean, you know, just constant. And that's what it's going to be. You know, we're going to.
What was the last telethon?
It's been a while.
I feel like
I remember that
Hurricane Katrina when Kanye said George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Yeah. Ended telethons. Yeah.
Exactly.
That was a great moment in history.
That was
when
fun.
When Kanye said that. God, I mean,
Majority dude Live.
Lost his mind.
MajorityLive.com. Go there. Click on the Brooklyn show. Click on the event. You will be able to buy a live streaming ticket. But make sure you sign up for the AM Quickie first. In fact, this is the easiest way to do it. Go to AMQuickie.com. Sign up for the AM Quickie. Tomorrow, you will get an email. You'll get the AM Quickie Blast from either Corey or Jack at the Majority Report. You read the Quickie. It's quick. And at the bottom of the Quickie, you will get a coupon code to save you over 50% to stream that show live. Meantime, if you're in New England, come see our Boston show in May. Still have tickets available for that. You are not going to want to miss that. I told somebody who the guest was last night, and they were like, whoa, seriously? I was like, yes.
I told my mom, she was excited about it too, and yep. She's coming to the Brooklyn one, so now she may even also come to the Boston one.
Wow. Folks, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. What else we got? 646-257. Oh, wait.
Left Reckoning?
Wait, do we have... oh, gosh. I saw we have Nomi, too. I just totally lost my mind. Nomi! You're back!
I don't see her yet.
Yeah. All right, there she's gone. And she's gone. We need to figure out how to do this.
We got to work on.
But Bradley's. we can hear her. So if she wants to plug the Nomi T show, go ahead. Oh wait, hold on one sec, Nomi. One sec. Sorry, your mic's not live.
This is fun.
Notice that.
Yeah.
I did notice that. Let's read some IMs here.
All right.
All right. Okay. So do we have sound from Nomi?
We have sound, so Nomi.
Okay, Nomi, why don't you let us know what's happening on the Nomi Key Show?
Well,
hold on, she's not coming out? No, all right, we're going to have to do it.
Nomi's having Ryan Cooper on to talk about I don't remember what you said, but Ryan Cooper is a great guest, and check out the Nomi Key Show to hear that. Okay? And then we'll talk about it more in the fun half.
But first, Matt, do you want to talk about what's happening on Left Reckoning? Can we hear him?
Yeah, you'll be able to hear me. Nick Bolin of High Country News is talking about rural Americas and if the Democrats are addressing them adequately. So that will be tomorrow night, Left Reckoning.
All right. We will see you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt!
What is up, everyone?
Fun hat. Nomi Key.
You did it!
Fun hat.
Let's go, Brandon!
Fun hat.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today!
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this, 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is it?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports.
We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
Oh, I'm going to go start life.
Libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say.
857-210-35-501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this.
Poop.
We call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all, my favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt.
Hey, buddy, we seen you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
Love it.
I do love that.
Mom. Gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late. And the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.